The Big Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio is on the air.
Hello.
Hey, Mark, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Good. How's the weather out in L.A.? It looks really sunny.
It's hot right now. Where are you at?
I'm out in New York. New York City, yeah. So we're on opposite ends of the country here.
That's okay, right and left.
All right, so we can get rolling whenever you're ready.
Okay.
You're listening to Third Eye Cinema, your source for in-depth discussion of pulp cinema and music. Tonight, vocalist Mark Bowles talks Yngwie Malmsteen, Royal Hunt, Iron Mask, and Ring of Fire on Big Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio. Third Eye Cinema, your source for music and film that matter. Cult, underground, independent, and generally falling outside the mainstream corporate boardroom paint-by-numbers bullshit. Tonight, we speak with one of the premier vocalists of modern metal. Working alongside such rock veterans as Ulrich Uli John Roth, Ted Nugent, and Savoy Brown, he exploded onto the metal scene as the pipes behind Swedish neoclassical shredder Yngwie Malmsteen's classic Trilogy album back in 1986. Appearing on later Malmsteen offerings Inspiration, Alchemy, and War to End Your All Wars, as well as releasing three solo records and briefly replacing D.C. Cooper and Danish symphonic power metal act Royal Hunt, he now works double duty fronting both Belgian power metal shredders Iron Mask and his own Ring of Fire alongside Trans-Siberian Orchestra keyboardist Vitalij Kuperij and legendary Shrapnel Records shredder Tony McAlpine. Join us to speak to another of the great metal vocalists, Mark Bowles, only here on Third Eye Cinema. But first, just to give you an idea of what we're talking about, here's Mark and Shrapnel Records shreddy Tony McAlpine. It's Ring of Fire, and They're Calling Your Name.
Come on!
Third Eye Cinema with our special guest tonight, Mark Bowles. Stay tuned.
Cinema, Primal Fear, and Rock Meets Classic, and you guys are listening to Third Eye Cinema. Wow.
You may have to cram most of them in there.
All right.
Hi, this is Alex Daropoli from Rhapsody of Fire, and you are listening to Third Eye Cinema. Enjoy.
Hey, this is Davey Vane from Vane. I want you to get very close to your speakers right now, right up against your speakers, because you're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
This is Lamval from Edenbridge, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Hi, here's Matt Sinner of Primal Fear and Sinner, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Hi, everybody out there. This is Micah Kiska speaking, singing for Unisonic in Plasma Dome, and you are listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Hey, this is Homer Simpson. Why don't you do yourself a favor and check out the new Eden Spirits album? It's called Symphony of Sin. I love it, especially for the giveaway free donuts!
I'll do your normal one if you want.
Sure, go ahead.
Hi, this is Paul Logue from the band Eden's Curse, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema. Keep rocking. Stay cursed.
Hey, this is Zeep from the band Orden Ogan, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Tonight we're talking metal, and we have with us one of the premier vocalists of both metal and rock. This man has played with veterans across the spectrum, from fronting the legendary Yngwie Malmsteen on Trilogy to working with the great Scorpions guitarist Ole John Roth, wacky 70s guitar monster Ted Nugent, and British rocker Savoy Brown, as well as working with veteran shredder Tony McAlpine and his own band Ring of Fire. Ladies and gentlemen, may I present one of the great vocalists in metal, Mark Bowles. Mark, welcome to Third Eye Cinema.
Hi, thanks. Thanks for having me. Boy, that sounds pretty impressive. I had no idea I did all that stuff.
Hey, I didn't know I was that good. You have an interesting voice, which combines a soaring range and a dash of raspiness with a butter-smooth warmth that brings Michael Sweet of Stryper very much to mind.
I've always had a loud voice since I was a little boy, and I was singing along with the radio all the time. I had a radio, a little transistor radio glued to my ear when I was in school. Yeah, right. We had those kind of things. They don't exist anymore, but anyway.
I'm old enough to remember them.
And, you know, I was just singing all the time, and there was so many styles of music on one station when I was growing up that I learned to sing all kinds of music. And my style is such a conglomeration of so many different things, so many different influences. And I came of age in the 80s, you know, my first albums and bands. Yeah, any bands pretty much started out in the 80s. And in that time, it was the time of singing high and singing loud. And
right.
And with all my other influences, that's just kind of became natural for me to sing that way. I didn't plan it. It just kind of came out that way.
So tell us a little about your history. You know, how does one go from working with Nugent and Savoy Brown to fronting what I believe remains the best-selling of all Yngwie Malmsteen albums?
I don't know, because the weird thing is how I got with Yngwie in 1985, just before. And by the way, the Trilogy album you're talking about, it was the first album I ever sang on in my life.
Wow.
I was supposed to sing on one with Nugent, but it didn't work out. It got screwed up with the producer or changed singers before I even got a chance. But anyway, that's another story. But with Malmsteen, I had done a pop rock kind of demo, and his manager had it when Jeff Scott Soto left the band. He quit the band. And his manager was playing this pop song demo, and Malmsteen heard it, and he goes, "Oh, that's the singer. I want that singer. Call him." And so, and this was like 2 weeks before they were scheduled to play at Oakland Stadium, 80,000 people. So I went down and auditioned, and then I had two rehearsals, and we were off and running. We played at Oakland Stadium, and then we got on the road with AC/DC straight out of there. And so I was out there doing that and singing that music before I even knew it hit me.
Wow. And, you know, you had quite an act to follow with Jeff Scott Soto before you and in good company with Rainbow Deep Purple frontman Joe Lynn Turner waiting in the wings.
So, you know, there.
Yeah. Joe's a good friend of mine, too, and I have a lot of good singer friends from that era and from nowadays, too. There was a lot of great people in the 80s, though.
So what happened there? Because the two other folks managed to hang on for at least two albums apiece, but you were in and out of the band. Is he as difficult to work with as some stories lead us to believe?
Probably more than you could imagine. I think it's the kind of you have to be there to understand it kind of deal. It's actually, he's not like an evil person. He's just a spoiled brat. And you know how you are around a spoiled brat kid that just won't stop being a spoiled brat, and it's
right.
really annoying? That's what happens, and you just get tired of it. I mean, he's phenomenal to work with, you know, playing music.
Oh, yeah.
Playing on stage, he's really talented, and he actually plays better off stage just sitting in a room with a guitar with just a couple people than he does in front of a stadium or doing a video or an album even.
Right.
So he's even more talented than people really know.
Wow.
But he's also more of a spoiled brat than you could ever imagine.
And yet you came back on board for Half of Inspiration, Alchemy, and War to End Our Wars a decade later. So what was that all about?
Well, I figured, you know, I had grown up a little bit. You know, when I started out, I was a little bit immature, maybe a little bit of brat, too. And I had changed quite a bit every time I'd come back. And I thought, well, you know, it's probably, you know, mellowed out by now.
Right.
And, you know, okay, I would come in, start recording, hanging out with him. We have a great time. And then after, like, he let his guard down within, you know, a matter of a few days usually or at the most a couple of weeks. And then he'd be back the same, exactly the same as he was when he met him in the 80s.
Wow.
No change at all. I think he sees himself as Yngwie Malmsteen, this character. And,
right.
and he has to maintain that character, you know,
and,
like a cartoon character kind of.
And were you with him? I think you were at the time when there was that whole nonsense scandal with the airport flight and the supposed threats. And
oh, there was all kinds of those. It was that was not just one, you know, that wasn't an isolated incident.
Wow. So you got pretty busy after that, joining Royal Hunt for a few albums, and Ulrich Roth for his Under a Dark Sky project, and then working with Belgium's Dushan Petrucci and Iron Mask, as well as fronting your own band Ring of Fire, and that's just to mention a few. So you've been pretty busy. What prompted what appears to be a fairly direct move from the more bombastic symphonic metal band Royal Hunt to the more familiar neoclassical guitar-based approach of Iron Mask?
It was just, you know, I hadn't done one of those kind of albums for quite a while, and it was kind of like a nostalgic, warm kind of feeling to do that again, and it was fun, and I enjoy that music. You know, I've grown and done other things over the years, but I'm actually really good at that, so it's always fun to go back and taste a little bit of the 80s.
So in terms of Iron Mask, in addition to Petrosi, you're back working with your Yngwie compatriot, Mats Olsson, who played on both Alchemy and War to End All Wars with you. So what's that like? He's obviously a hell of a player.
Yeah, he's great, but he's kind of a hard guy to get a hold of. He lives in Thailand most of the time. He's either there or he's in Sweden. He's all over the place. But a great guy and a great keyboardist, too. I actually haven't seen him for a long time.
I was wondering if it felt like old home week, you know, you go back together again. But if you're not seeing him.
Yeah, we should have an ex-Malmsteen reunion of all the alumni. That would be a fun party.
That's right. It would be a big room. I imagine having the two of you in the band has helped lend authenticity when the band was in the same neoclassically inflected guitar and keyboard trade-offs of a track like a Lion in a Cage. So did you have any input to that, or is it all Dushan and Mats?
You know, they wrote the album. I was really busy when they were doing it, so I could have been involved in it, but they did a good job. And, you know, I don't look at it as trying to relive anything. It's just, it's kind of in that style. That's all. It's new music in that style. That's all. It's not trying to, I don't want to relive the past. It was hard enough as it was.
I hear that. So since you're obviously based in, I thought the Midwest, but apparently L.A., do you do any in-person recording or touring with a band, or is it strictly a matter of email and tapes back and forth?
Yeah, it's a little of both. You know, whenever budget allows, for example, with Royal Hunt, I always flew to Denmark and worked over there with the band, with the whole band.
Right.
And that's my preference. I really love to do that because you get more of a chemistry that way. You still get some chemistry working with other people over the internet too, but that budgets require that a lot of times nowadays. It's hard to get everybody in the same room. That's the preferable way, is to get the band actually playing together live. That's awesome.
And what was that like? Because you were actually the second replacement in that band after, let's see, it was DC Cooper, and then I forget who was in the middle. And
Ryan
then it
Cromwell.
Right, and then they brought you in. So what was that like? How different was that project?
Well, John West almost sang with Yngwie. He went there and he recorded a couple songs with Yngwie. I think that was before the Alchemy album, but he didn't make the cut. Well, anyway, it's kind of like, you know, Dougie White's a friend of mine. He went to Malmsteen after me. I guess he's followed me in a couple bands. He's worked with Uli Jon Roth, too. We all trade places. It's all good, you know, because I don't sing it like they do. They don't sing like I do.
Yeah, you guys are very different. Did you swap out because DC was coming back, or was it just, you know, you were leaving and then they were looking for somebody?
No, actually, the Royal Hunt music has become really so specialized. Andre Anderson is really the only writer and producer in that band. That's the way he wants it, which is fine. He founded the band. But for the style of music that he was writing, I had told him that DC would be the best singer for it because I thought he fit the band better than I did or better than John West or any singer that they'd ever had. I just thought he fit the style.
Right.
His sound. And so they went with DC again. They had asked me to do another album, but it wasn't that I didn't want to do it. I just didn't think I fit the band as well as DC did. So.
Right. So speaking of which, let's talk Ring of Fire.
I put myself out of a job that way, but...
Well, you got other jobs. So
Yeah.
Speaking of which, let's talk Ring of Fire, where you work with more than a few notable personages on the scene. You actually started the band back in 2000, but things really started to gel in 2002 when you brought in the great shrapnel shredder, Tony McAlpine. So how did that come about?
Well, I started working with Tony on the solo album in 1999, which I called Ring of Fire, which gave me the idea to start the band Ring of Fire. You know, and we've been close friends ever since. We hang out all the time. He's always doing a lot of different things. He's doing a lot of solo albums now, and he's working with Portnoy and Sheridan and Sheehan now as well. And those guys are all working with tons of different bands, too. So it's hard to track him down sometimes, but he's actually a better piano player than he is a guitarist, believe it or not. He's a classical pianist playing guitar. But he's a phenomenal musician and a great guy.
So in addition to a long-running solo career of instrumental albums, starting with Edge of Insanity back in 1985, where he was vying for attention alongside the likes of Malmsteen, Paul Gilbert of Razor X and Mr. Big, Marty Friedman of Megadeth, Jason Becker of Dazed and Lee Roth, and the great Vinnie Moore, who he provided keyboard accompaniment to on Mind's Eye. Tony also took part in the Mars Project Drive with Rob Rock, Rudy Sarzo, Tommy Aldridge, and of course he's been a key part of Ring of Fire for most of his recorded output. This guy's no slouch.
Yeah, he's great. He's a very humble guy, and he likes riding motorcycles as much as he likes playing guitar. So he's my kind of guy, too. I'm the same way.
There you go. You also managed to pull in famed vocalist Timo Tolkki of Stratovarius on bass. How did that work out?
Well, our bass player that we usually have for Ring of Fire, Philip Bino, was actually out with Steve Vai. They've been out on the road for over a year, and I think they just finished up now. So he was not available, and Timo was going to mix the album anyway, and he said, why don't I play bass? And by the way, if Virgil can't do it, I have a drummer that can do it as well. So he ended up doing the drums and bass over there in Scandinavia.
Speaking of shifting roles, given that both yourself and Tony, as you had mentioned, have provided keyboard duties to various projects, does longstanding keyboardist Vitalij Kuprich, who also worked with the Trans-Siberian Orchestra at one point, ever feel nervous about job security?
I don't know. I mean, I think there's a little bit of friction between Vitaly and Tony because they're both classical pianists.
Right.
But Tony actually plays guitar and keyboards, and people don't like that. You know, musicians don't like people that do two things. They're like, make up your mind, do one or the other, you know.
But I'm just thinking with three keyboardists in the band, he's got to be like,
Vitaly is phenomenal, and he's still touring with Trans-Siberia, and he's in Europe with them right now. So he's been working with them for 4 or 5 years now. And so a good part of the year he's out with them. But we're going to snag him for a Ring of Fire tour this late spring, early summer.
So are you actually doing the States?
I would love to. I'm trying to. We're trying. But it's much easier to get gigs in Europe, South America, and Japan. So we're putting that together first, and we'll try to do some shows here.
Well, unfortunately, as you know, the metal scene hasn't really come back as well as it has, you know, stayed throughout the entire time in Japan and Europe and South America. So I can see that there's a problem with a lot of bands I've talked to. Like, well, I'd love to come to the States, but...
Well, the problem is, I don't know why we can't get it together. I mean, this is a huge country with lots of music fans. The fans are out there, but it's just not organized. The scene is not organized to support the bands or the fans.
So one important point we didn't get to yet is that Ring of Fire was primarily active in the early millennium, folding for a good 10 years before reforming for Battle of Leningrad. So what happened there and what brought you guys back together?
Well, you know, it's always in the back of my mind to do another album with everybody, but I didn't know if everybody would be into it or not. And, you know, it was... as embarrassing as it sounds, it was Serafino Perugino, the president and owner of Frontiers Records.
Right.
He said, I was asking him about something else, I don't remember, and he said, hey, why don't you do a Ring of Fire album? I'm like, well, you're going to give me a budget for that? Sure. I said, okay, let me talk to the guys. And everybody was thrilled to do it. So, you know, I don't know why I didn't think of it before, you know. We kind of get caught up in survival. We're in survival mode most of the time, us working musicians nowadays, because of no, you know, the lack of royalty checks. They don't come anymore, so.
Yeah, that's a very different scene. But like you said, I mean, I've been hearing that from a lot of people. Serafino's been very active in getting a lot of bands, not just in the metal scene, but in the rock scene, the hard rock scene,
yeah.
The AOR scene.
His favorite is melodic rock, pretty much. But he's a good guy, and he's helped a lot of musicians. He actually gives a decent advance still, which other labels, unless you're Beyonce, you're not getting not getting any advance anymore.
And that says something, but we won't go there. It's unusual in the fact that few of the players have changed in the interim. Usually when a band goes on hiatus for such a long time, the members have all moved on to other commitments. You actually managed to get the whole gang back together with a big name in tow as well, which of course was Schema.
Yeah, I'm happy about that, and I'm real proud of the album. It's the first concept album that I've ever done and we've ever done as a band, and I think the trick was to make something that is conceptual and the songs tied together by one idea and also let them be able to stand on their own as well, and I think we accomplished that. I like the album a lot, so...
Yeah, it's an interesting album. It's got a very mid-tempo overall feel. I mean, there's some tracks like No Way Out and They're Calling Your Name that fall right into the mold of what you were doing with Yngwie, but the better portion of the album is more power metal in orientation. So is this a deliberate choice given the subject matter?
I think the story, you know, I studied a lot of books. I took a lot of books home from the library. I know how old school is that. and I actually did look online, but I got most of the material for my mindset of writing this stuff from the actual stories and from books, history books, and lots of novels that were written about it, too. There's a lot of stuff out there I wasn't even aware of. The story lent itself to some good music. It was easy once I got our head wrapped around the story, you know.
Talking about old school, what's next? You're going to tell me you're using the card catalog?
No, they don't even have that anymore, but
So any upcoming tour info, or did you want to point the listeners to your website or your Facebook page?
Yeah, I have a couple personal Facebook pages, but I update with all of my stuff that is going on, and my website will be updated soon. It's markbowlsmusic.com. I need to make a new Ring of Fire website. I'm sorry, I'm still behind on that, but that'll be up soon. You can check out on Facebook if you want to know what's going on. That's probably updated the most, you know, up to date.
And anything in terms of Iron Mask?
I don't know. There might be some shows coming up. I don't know. I'm going to be doing some shows with Dio Disciples again in the spring and doing the Monsters of Rock cruise. This week after next at NAMM here, I'm going to be doing some shows with Uli John Roth and a bunch of different people, with Roy G and with Craig Goldie. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, with that, Mark, I'd like to thank you again for joining me here on Third Eye Cinema. We hope to have you back on again to discuss your next project.
Great. Thanks for having me, man.
All right. Appreciate your time.
All right. Maybe I'll see you out there on the East Coast someday.
That'd be great.
I think it's out there. You know, it's not a foreign country.
That's exactly right. Yeah, fly over this way. We're here.
All right. Great talking to you. Thanks for having me.
Take care, Mark. Bye.
You too. Cheers. Bye-bye. Bye.
And to close out our interview with Mark, here's one from his other band, Iron Mask. Stay tuned after the close for one more from Ring of Fire. But right now, this is Iron Mask, Like a Lion in a Cage.
for joining us tonight. We hope you enjoy our interview with Mark Bowles. Next week on Third Eye Cinema, D.C. Cooper, Silent Force, and Royal Hunt. If you'd like to contact us here, comments, suggestions, or you're a filmmaker, musician, you'd like to join us on air, email us at thirdeyecinema@hotmail.com. Visit our website, thirdeyecinema.wordpress.com, or our Facebook page, facebook.com/thirdeyecinema. Third Eye Cinema brought to you by the Big Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio. Here's one more from Ring of Fire. Don't even think about tuning out now because there's no way out. you missed any part of this or any other Third Eye Cinema broadcast, just visit our website or Facebook page for links to the shows in question. All Blog Talk Radio shows are available for archive listener download at your convenience. And next week.
Hi, this is DC Cooper from Royal Hunt, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
And coming in March.
This is Lumval from Edenbridge, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
See you next week.